van der Heer, is that approximately correct? Who is a professor at ETH Zurich. Sarah has previously held positions in Bristol, Utrecht, Toulouse, and Leiden, where she received her PhD in 1987. And she is an expert on empirical processes, having written the book Empirical Processes in M Estimation, which I used quite a lot during my master's thesis. So thank you for that. And has worked recently on lots of things relating to high dimensional data. So we're very excited to hear about what she's going to talk about today. So for questions, if you want to ask a question, there are two ways you can do it. So the first is to raise your hand, and then I will interrupt Sarah at a convenient point, and you can ask your unmute you, and then you can ask your question. Or if you prefer, you can type your question in the chat, and then you won't appear on the recording, and I can read the question out to Sarah for you. Okay. Excellent. All right. Take it away, Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this nice introduction, and thank you very much for inviting me. So let me start screen sharing. This one. It's already full screen, right?
Yeah.
Good. So in my talk, what I will address is the following. In many algorithms nowadays, machine learning algorithms, for instance, they report zero training error, but still a good test error. And so I want to somehow contribute to an understanding of this phenomenon. And I will look at classification problems. And in classification problems, if you have a small test error, it must mean that the base error is small, because that's the unavoidable error that you'll always make if you believe in a model, at least. So the test error can only be small if the base error is small. So I'll look at that context, and then look at algorithms with zero training error, actually just three algorithms. And zero training error means that they interpolate the data, right? And if you interpolate the data, that's only possible if you have enough flexibility to do that. So that's, I will look at the situation which is high dimensional, so that you have like a regression model with very many covariables. And then the main issue will be the ADA boost algorithm, which you might know, which has been around for a while from Shapir, Freund and Shapir, and try to explain its success a little bit using this max margin approximation. Okay, so this is the title again, and then this is joint work with Geoffrey Chinot, Felix Kugelmeister, and Matthias Löffler. And these are, so Geoffrey and Matthias are postdocs at our institute, and Felix is a PhD student. And so I work together with them, and they're a great team, and so much, or maybe everything of what I'm going to tell is their hard work. Okay. So here's a little bit the overview. So I will look at algorithms with zero training error. That means that they interpolate the data. And I'm going to concentrate on the special case where the final interpolator is the one with the smallest L1 norm, because you can interpolate the data in very many ways. You can also look at interpolation looking at the smallest L2 norm, but that's a completely different situation. And so my view will be more like the sparsity view, where you assume sparsity. And if you do that, you want to, of course, see how it relates to regularization instead of interpolation. Yeah, so if you have a high dimensional model, you either interpolate or not, and then you do regularization, that you introduce some kind of penalty term or regularization term. And I'll just look at that, and it's kind of easy for that case to prove some bounds, and they will form the benchmark for the interpolating case. And then I'll show you some rates of convergence, which I can then compare with this benchmark. So here's the setup. So it's going to be a theoretical work where I have a given design matrix X with n rows and p columns. So n is, say, the number of observations, and p is the number of variables. And p, the number of variables, is assumed to be much larger than n. So that's the higher dimensional component. Then you can think of a regression model with an unknown vector of coefficients. But actually, we'll look at classification and then the scale is not identified. So there you can assume without loss of generality that the vector of coefficients has L2 norm equal to 1. That's just a normalization assumption. And the sparsity assumption is that the vector of coefficients has only a few non-zero entries. And the non-zero entries, if I count them, I have S. S stands for sparsity. Then there's a noise factor. So the noise is normalized in L2. And I call sigma the noise level, and that's the quantity that's sparse. So in this setup, it's more or less also like in machine learning. The noise is not necessarily independent of the axis. It can be adversarial noise, it can be also a deterministic quantity. But you may think of this, and it will be as a first step if you're statisticians, that's the way to think of it. You may think of this as just random noise. And then this sigma is here random, okay? And then the sparsity is assumed to be small in the usual sense that, so say like S, the sparsity is the number of active variables, and it should be smaller than the number of observations. And then there is a log term in terms of the number of variables to pay because you don't know a priori which coefficients are non-zero. Oh, so here's the notation, the L infinity norm with an infinity here, the L2 norm. The L1 norm is just the sum of the absolute values. And the L0 is not a norm, but that's counting the number of entries which are not zero. Okay. So these are the two programs I want to look at. So you observe this design matrix. And you have this regression function. So let's say it looks like this. So just a regression function plus noise, but you only observe the sign. So you don't observe the regression function itself. And that's like in a classification problem. So the response variable is binary, plus or minus one. Okay. And the interpolator, which is developed by Plan and Vershinin, so I'll call that the Plan and Vershinin estimator, is the one which says, okay, I'm going to interpolate the signs which I observed, and I use the interpolator with smallest L1 norm. And that's like one bit compressed sensing, except that we're looking at the case where there is noise. Okay, so compressed sensing is where you observe X beta star and you want to recover the coefficients. And one bit compressed sensing is that you even further compress the real valued random variables or whatever, the real valued variables by a binary variable. So then it's only one bit. So it's a compression motivation, but you can also think of it as just the classification problem. Now, in this case, if you minimize the L1 norm, because of course the scale is not identified, we have to somehow use a normalization, and that's the empirical norm of the x beta. So that's the vector x, that's a row vector times a column vector. So that's equal to one. Okay, so this is a vector in n-dimensional space. X beta star is an n-dimensional vector. And these are the entries of that n-dimensional vector. Okay. And the max margin is the same situation. You observe X and the sign of the regression. And I look at the margin, which is y times xb. And I look at the minimal value, and I want that to be maximal over all vectors b with L1 norm less than or equal to 1. So that's, again, interpolating the signs, because you certainly will then have that the sine of y and the sine of the x beta hat will be the same, because you want the minimal value to be maximal. So you will certainly have that y times xb will be positive. So those are two interpolators. And then we want to obtain bounds in L2. So the true interpolator, the true vector of coefficients is L2 norm equal to 1 because of the normalization. And then my estimator, I also normalized to have L2 norm equal to 1. And then I want to find out how close are they. Okay. And I'm going to look really at this compressed sensing type of situation where the design matrix consists of just IID standard Gaussian random variables, which is maybe a bit of a disappointing assumption, but at least it's a starting point. And it's going to be, I don't know how to generalize it yet. And this is the notation. So in probability in of order at most, just not to get too complicated formulas, okay? Okay, so I'm going to look at theory, and there's some theory about one-bit compressed sensing, this Plan and Vershinian estimator, but for the max margin, I'm not aware of any theory, and it is related to the ADA-Boost algorithm. So we get, our aim is to get actually results for ADA-Boost via this max margin interpolator. So let's look at some basic facts, which I'm just showing you because I think it's kind of nice. So if you look at vectors with norm equal to 1, then the expectation of the product of their signs, so x beta is just a linear combination of Gaussians, and xb is also a linear combination of Gaussians, and the expectation of having the same sign is the arc sign of the inner product. That's called the Grothendieck identity. So the probability that the signs are unequal, you can think of this as the probability of making a misclassification, is the arc cosine of the inner product between the two vectors. And that's not hard to see if you think a little bit. So you can sort of think of it as a two-dimensional situation, although we look at higher dimensions, where you have two vectors and they are norm one, so they lie on the sphere. And the geodesic distance is just this distance along the sphere. And that's the probability of making a misclassification error for those two vectors. And then the 1 over pi here. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is just say, okay, for the classification problem, you just have, like for the regression problem, some splitting up into the unavoidable error, sigma squared, and the error due to the estimation of the unknown coefficients. So let's do that. So you have this inner product between two vectors. If they have norm equal to 1, it's 1 minus the distance squared between the two vectors. That's quite obvious. And then there's 1 half here. Okay, so the inner product is related to 1 minus the distance squared in this way. So if you look at the probability of a misclassification, it's just this r cosine of the inner product, which is 1 minus the distance squared. And then you just see that if you do a one-term Taylor expansion, that the geodesic distance is more or less the L2 distance if they are close together, which is clear from this picture. So the geodesic distance is along the curve, but the straight line is not much different. Okay. Now, suppose you have... So again, just for one observation, say this is one observation from the test set. And so you have the sign of the regression, and you have the noise with some variance. Then the base error is the probability that the sign is of the noisy regression is not the sign of the regression without noise. And then you use this Grothendieck identity, and you see it's the R cosine of this quantity, which is by doing just the one term Taylor expansion for approximately equal to sigma, the noise level. Okay. So so the probability of making a misclassification error if you use B as your classifier is just R cosine functions, which you can then split up in a term involving the unavoidable base error, sigma squared, and a term due to the estimation. So the due to making error in estimating beta star. So this is exactly like in regression. So in regression also you have the excess risk, which is this L2 error, and then sigma squared. So the excess risk is here and sigma squared is the unavoidable error. Okay, now I want to show a result for the regularized estimator. So I need some identities, which are very straightforward. First of all, if you look at the expectation of the inner product between the sign and this linear combination, it's again the inner product of the true beta star and B. And then there's some coefficient in front of it. So if I put here and the difference between the vector B, so B is an arbitrary vector here, huh? The difference between the vector B and the vector beta star, the true vector, of course, beta star in the product with itself is one. So you get this expression, which is again the one minus the inner product, which is again the L2 distance squared. So if you want to estimate the vector of coefficients beta star, then this can make up a good loss function because this is clearly minimized, or a risk function. This is clearly minimized at B equal to beta star. So what you do to estimate beta star is just replace this expectation by an average and minimize that. Okay, and then you do a regularization to make sure that you can deal with this high dimensional situation. So we do that. So there's a minus sign missing here. So instead of minimization, we do a maximization of the margin, and then minus a regularization term, the L1 norm of the vector of coefficients. Okay, and you want the L2 norm to still be one. So this is just like the lasso. And it's just the lasso is, if you observe the regression function, you can do the lasso, just do least squares, and a penalization on the L1 norm, that's the lasso, and this is not much different, okay? Okay, now let's look at this margin, so the average margin and its expectation. This is a vector of length p, so this is a very long vector, and I subtract its expectation, and then I take the maximum. So I take the maximum of p random variables. They are independent. So you can, well, sort of show that it behaves like square root log p over n, just like the maximum of p Gaussians. Yeah, so there is, these are more or less Gaussians, and you have p of them, and the maximum behaves logarithmic in p, and there's a square root. There's an n because of the normalization with 1 over n here. Okay. So if you do this regularized estimator, beta hat is the regularized estimator, its loss, or so the L2 convergence rate is here. It's more or less square root n log p over n times the L1 norm of beta star. And then the noise plays the role here. It's 1 plus sigma squared. And so this is my benchmark for the regularized case. And just so that you see that it's not very deep, let me look at the proof. So the estimator is defined by maximizing this quantity. So it will be larger than the same expression at the true vector beta star, right? So I now just put a minus sign in front so that the sign switches. And I put the penalties together. And there comes somebody visiting me, the cats. Okay. So this is just rewriting that you're maximizing something. And then I subtract and add expectations. Let's see. So this is the sort of the theoretical risk. And we just saw it's equal to this expectation. And then I replace the expectation by an average. And then I have to correct for that. And here I can use the dual norm inequality. So the inner product between two vectors can be bounded by the L infinity norm times L1 norm. And then you get this. Lambda hat is this L infinity norm. And this is the L1 norm, beta hat minus beta star. And they're left over with the term, which was already there. And then we use this arc min inequality, which we just saw on the previous page. And then we use the triangle inequality. Yeah? So you see there's nothing deep going on. Okay? Yes?
Judith, you still have a question?
No. I wasn't sure what lambda hat is, but you said it afterwards.
So here's lambda hat again. Yeah, that's a good point. It goes quickly. Lambda hat is like the maximum of P, more or less Gaussian random variable. So that's a random variable, but you easily have some kind of concentration inequality for it. So with large probability, lambda hat will be of order square root log P over N, just like for the lasso, your usual thing. Yeah? So that means here, this is the inequality. But if you take your tuning parameter not too small, but also not too large, it gives you a bound in with high probability. Yeah, it's okay. So it looks very much like the lasso. And you can refine that if you assume exact sparsity. So suppose that there are only a few non-zero coefficients in the true vector, and the number of them is little s, then the rate of convergence becomes lambda squared times s, and then something with the noise. And lambda is again of the same order, so that means lambda squared is log p over n in order. So you get something like the number of active variables divided by the number of observations, a log term, and 1 plus sigma squared. Okay, so the proof is again very simple, but I don't think I have that much time, but this is the proof. It's really just being a little bit more careful with the triangle inequality, that's all. So this is the benchmark. So the mismatch classification error of this regularized estimator consists of two terms, the unavoidable base risk and the term due to estimating beta star, so the excess risk. And the excess risk is squared log p over n times the L1 norm if the true vector is only L1 sparse. And it can be improved to s log p over n if the true vector is L0 sparse, which means that it has only S non-zero coefficients. And you see what is happening here. If there is no noise, the error is still not zero, which is unlike for the lasso. And that's because you only observe the sign. You don't observe the complete regression function. So there's a price to pay. You cannot really exactly recover beta star. And it's, I'm not sure if there are lower bounds here, but it's quite clear that you cannot exactly recover it. And so there's still an error, even if you don't have noise. Huh? And if the noise is small, so you have the unavoidable noise here. And if the noise is small, this is all in order. So if the noise is small, one plus the noise squared is of same order as just one. So you can sort of cancel this term. And so the noise doesn't really hurt in a sense, if you look at the order, at least if it's small. And that's the case we're interested in, small noise, because otherwise we'll never have small test error. Okay. So that's my benchmark. So now let's compare that with the interpolation. So the Plan and Verschinin interpolator and the Max Margin interpolator. And we will use there to study them results from basis pursuit, which is going to be noisy basis pursuit. So what's noisy basis pursuit? In noisy basis pursuit, you do observe the regression. So you do observe this regression, the real valued response variable. So you just have a regression model and then you interpolate the data. So see, you interpolate the data and you take the interpolator, which has L1 norm minimal. Okay, then there are theoretical results in this paper by Wojtaszczyk and also in more recent work. And so what we derived is the same as this paper from 2010, but our proofs are quite different. So this is more like a real, like from a different community, I would say machine learning or computer science. And our language is more statistical. So that's noisy basis pursuit. And then later afterwards, we will consider the case where you only observe the sign of the regression function. And we look at the interpolator from Plan and Verschinin. And we look at the max margin interpolator, okay? So that's to come. And in all three cases, I will need a good bound for the L1 norm of the estimator. And that's kind of clear because once you have a good bound for the L1 norm, you can use results from empirical process theory of empirical processes with coefficients bounded in L1. And that gives you bounds for entropies and so on. So then you're in business. But I'll explain it in more detail later also. Okay, so let's look first at basis pursuit, where you do observe the regression function with noise. And you interpolate it, and you choose the one with smallest L1 norm, okay? So what is a good bound for the estimator? Maybe I should go back. So the point here is if you have noisy observations, the true beta star is not interpolating quite clearly because of the noise. So somehow we want to interpolate the noise to make sure that you interpolate the data. And this is more or less what the result says. If you want a good bound for the L1 norm of the estimator, you can bound it by the L1 norm of the truth and a term which is the noise level times square root n divided by log p. And the reason for this is sort of follows from the KKT conditions, or maybe from the dual formulation. And if you do that, I won't give the details. It says that the L1 norm of the estimator is bounded by the L1 norm of the truth, and then a term involving the L2 norm of the noise divided by something. And divided by something, you want to divide it by something large so that it will be small. And this something is the maximum of Gaussian random variables. But okay, these linear combinations, each time for different lambda, you have a different number of Gaussian random variables, and then you minimize again over lambda. So it's the minimum of a maximum. And there comes the assumption that the sample size should be small compared to the number of variables because we want this to be large. And if you look at extreme value theory, if you have P, so P independent Gaussian random variables, you have this extreme value limiting distribution. And I think it's the Gumbel limiting distribution. So we know this maximum behaves like square root log P. But it's a little bit more involved because we have, again, an infimum here. So this is a lot of technical work and we want it to be non-asymptotic. So, but we get that this infimum here behaves like indeed like square root log P. If the sample size is small compared to P, for instance, the sample size is smaller than P divided by log P, something like that. So really the high dimensionality is here playing is crucial here, otherwise we won't have the log P here. Yeah, so this term is the square root n is here and the log P is here, square root n times sigma. So if you then have a bound, if you then have this bound for the L1 norm, you can use empirical process theory to get bounds for quadratic forms where this L1 norm appears. So you just take the empirical average minus the theoretical average, which is one if the coefficients normalize to one, and you look at these quadratic forms, how different are they from their expectation, and then the L1 norm plays a role. And we just showed that this L1 norm behaves like square root n divided by log p. So that's exactly nice cancelling. So that gives you that these quadratic forms are a distance, so like this sigma hat is occurring there. So that gives finally this result, that the estimation error of the noisy basis pursuit estimator is bounded by C times some universal constant times sigma hat. And of course, if there's no noise, then it means that it's zero. Yeah, so that in basis pursuit, you have in the non-noisy version, you have exact recovery. But in the noisy version, you have some error still. But if the noise is small, it's still reasonable. So now let's look at one-bit compressed sensing. So now we only observe the sign of the regression function. We minimize the L1 norm as in the basis pursuit with an interpolation and with a normalization. And then the question is again, what is a good bound for the estimator? And again, you see the true factor, beta star, is not interpolating because of the noise. So again, we have to interpolate the noise. And if we do that, so the idea is, so if you put here the true factor for B plus something which interpolates the noise, then you have a candidate because then you have an interpolator. And so the L1 norm of this candidate will be less than the L1, will be larger than this one which minimizes it. So then we have a bound for the L1 norm of the minimizer. If I have a candidate here which I can control, then this one will have an L1 norm smaller than this candidate. Okay. Okay. So why not interpolate the noise? So I interpolate here the noise. Xi is the noise. And I take B hat, the L1 minimizer, which interpolates the noise. And I just take here. So I know from the previous result from basis pursuit, I have this L1 norm for this interpolator under control. And moreover, if I add it to beta star, the true factor, I have an interpolator with the right sign. So that's a candidate. So I know that the L1 norm of the estimator is bounded by the L1 norm of this candidate. Oh yeah, I have to normalize it, but that doesn't really hurt very much. So then I'm done. Then I have a bound for the L1 norm. Yeah, so that's the idea. So I have my true vector I have my noise. I interpolate it with some other vector. And then x beta star plus noise is the same as this by definition because I interpolated it. So I have here a vector with the correct, which gives the correct sign, which this one interpolates the signs. So the L1 norm of beta star plus beta hat will be larger than of my Planck-Verschinen estimator, which is the minimizer. So then again, you have a bound for the L1 norm, and I'm not going to show all the technical details, but then you can do empirical bounds, so supremum of empirical processes indexed by functions with coefficients with L1 norm bounded by some quantity. And then we get this result. So the Planck-Verschinen estimator, this interpolator, has in L2, the if you have exact sparsity, the rate is like before, S log P over N. And now if you look at the benchmark, it was times 1 plus sigma, and now it's just plus sigma, plus the noise. And for the, if you have only L1 sparsity, you have, again, it's exactly like the benchmark estimator, but instead of multiplying by 1 plus sigma, you add the noise sigma. So it means that if the noise is large, larger than this term, you still feel it. So in the benchmark estimator, if the noise is small, you hardly feel the noise. You already have base noise, and that's the main part. But here the it can be that the noise is larger than the error due to estimation. So it's not a less beautiful result, which is of course clear because you do interpolation instead of regularization. So it's not as good. Okay. So how much time do I have? What do you say?
About 10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. So I'll skip that. So now go to ADA boost. So we observe as before x and the sign. And the ADA boost algorithm is as follows. You first take a vector of weights, which are on the simplex. Well, ADA boost is for weak learners. They are defined differently. So to mimic that, we normalize our design so that it all design entries are between minus one and one. You start with an initialization, and then you go in a certain direction. Don't ask me too much, but this is the just to see it quickly. You go in a certain direction, and then you define a step size, which is here the one inspired by exponential loss. And then you update your vector of coefficients with a learning rate eta. And then you update the weights, and you keep on doing this until stopping time, so capital T, okay? And then there are results which say that if the learning rate goes to zero and the number of iterations goes to infinity, the ADA boost algorithm converges to the max margin classifier, which is maximizing the minimal margin. And that's up to scaling the minimum L1 norm interpolator. That is, you look at the minimal, you make sure that the margin is always bigger than one, and then you look for a solution with L1 norm minimal. So there are some theoretical results for the relation between ADA boost and this max margin classifier. When the number of observations is of the same order as the number of variables. So that's not our case. We have that the number of variables is much larger than the number of observations. And that's really a crucial assumption in our theory. So let's look at this max margin, which is the same as this minimum L1 norm estimator. And what is a good bound for the L1 norm of this estimator? Now, if you look at this carefully, you would say, okay, does it somehow mimic the behavior of the true vector beta star? So if you insert here beta star, the true vector, and look, think of the case where there is no noise to simplify. If you insert here beta star, this is just the absolute value of that vector. So this is just the absolute value of a Gaussian random variable. And then you take the minimum of n standard Gaussian random variables. And the minimum of n standard Gaussian random variables behaves like 1 over n. So that's very, very small. And you want it to be bigger than 1. So beta star is no way a good candidate for solving this problem. It's completely out of scope. Of course, you can rescale, but then this L1 norm is going to be very large. So somehow this is a very strange thing that you're doing something where you think, well, beta star itself is not a good solution to this problem. So why would this be a good estimator? Okay. Maybe in view of time, you can write down the... So again, we want a bound for the L1 norm of the estimator. You can again, like for basis pursuit, do the dual norm formalization. And then we get a lower bound. So I won't go into details there. But let's look at the upper bound and just briefly explain the idea that, again, what we use is this basis pursuit idea. So let me just show you the picture. So the true vector beta star is not bigger than 1, right? It's going to be arbitrarily close to 0 at certain points. So it's not a good candidate for this minimization problem. But what we can do, we can say, well, there is some error. We just look at this linear function and we truncate it at some positive value, say epsilon. Okay, then it's nicely away from 0. So now the margin is epsilon, so it's already something. But then we make a mistake. And this mistake, we just consider it as error. So don't worry about the noise because we can do that as before. But if there's no noise, we have this additional error. And this additional error, we just interpolate. X beta hat is an interpolating this additional error. So if I take that one and I subtract it from beta star, I get a nice function which is staying away from 0. So it has a good margin. And it has the right sign. So that's the idea. So again, interpolating some kind of error will help me to find a bound for the L1 norm of the estimator. And it turns out to be like this after some work because you have to renormalize. And what occurs is a funny power 2/3 here. But this one, we sort of know, this should look familiar. This looks like the benchmark, except that the noise is at a different place. And it very much also looks like this expression we had for the Plon and Vershinian estimator. But now there's this funny power 2/3. Okay. Anyway, you have to do some work to look at, not at the L1 norm, but at the normalized vector beta hat, the L1 norm of this normalized vector, beta hat divided by its L2 norm. And for that, we use, you know, some further empirical process theory. And then we end up with this result. So this is exactly the same as for the Plon and Vershinian estimator, except that it's the slow rate. And if you have exact sparsity, we were unable to explore that or exploit it. So we don't have the fast rate. We only have the slow rate with the power 1/4. And it's this, the 1/4 is like for the benchmark estimator. but the noise is at a different place. So maybe I should look at the table here. So here's the benchmark estimator and the unavoidable base error. And you see that the expressions are similar, except that for the benchmark estimator, if the noise is small, you can forget about it as far as the excess risk is concerned. For the Plan and Verschijning estimator and for the max margin estimator, the noise will play its role. And we have Plan and Verschijning and max margin the same result. Well, there's a log term. Yeah, I don't know. Of course, a log term. But we can't prove fast rates. We're unable to prove fast rates for the max margin estimator. Okay, and then, well, just to conclude also, we can we have exact non-asymptotic bounds on how far this max margin estimator then is from the ADA boost output. So this can also be used to conclude rates of convergence for the ADA boost algorithm. Okay, then we worked harder. You know, what we started with was a result with here 1/12. Now we got it back to 1/4, but I think we are now in the situation when we get 1/3 here. So it's probably this is the final answer, the rate 1/3 here. What we can do, so what you can do in these kind of problems is just first prove a bound for the L1 norm and then use all the results. There are very many results in literature on the line segmentation problem, and you can use their results. And there's one paper where we can conclude this power 1/3, but so far we do not understand the proof because it's very geometrical. And the paper is not published, so we really should understand the proof. But I think it's correct, certainly. So that means the rates can still be improved. And we hope to have that on archive soon, okay? Yeah, so conclusion. So these ADA boost or max margin type estimators have the same rate as the slow rate for one bit compressed sensing with linear programming. So the Plan and Verschijning estimator. The confidence is less. It means you have a very strong concentration for the Verschijning estimator, but for the max margin estimator, we don't have that because if you look at the minimum of random variable, that doesn't concentrate very, very strongly. And so lower bounds, that's an open question, which I'm not able to answer yet. And we looked at some lower bounds, the lower bounds for the L1 norm. They are the same as the upper bound. So there we are tight. And indeed, if we do the simulations, we see the power 1/3, which I had here appearing. So it seems to be something you also see. You can see in data. Okay. Well, that's it. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sarah. And do feel free to use your virtual applause to acknowledge Sarah's excellent talk.
Thank you.
Right. Does anyone have any questions? Judith, I can see you've got your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah, for the talk. I have two questions. One is that I was trying to figure out why P greater than N was much more interesting. Is it because you have this sort of assumption on the X that are with the ID random variables, Gaussian random variables, that gives some kind of smoothing effect that allows you to control everything for very large P? Or?
Well, it's just, it's in the log. So it's this phenomenon here. So for the maximum of p Gaussian random variables, we need a lower bound that it behaves like square root log p. And if you don't want to have high dimensional problems, then the log will disappear. That's all. But that looks, well, now it's now kind of nice. You have your log here and it disappears with the log here. And that's kind of pleasing. So, but if you don't mind logs, then the high dimensionality can be, of course you need some high dimensionality, because otherwise you can't interpolate clear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But what we see in the simulations, it's really kicking in the theory for high dimensions. That's still kind of interesting. So apparently, because it plays a role in all the other derivations as well, and you see it in the simulations, if we don't let P grow, then it just, we get completely wrong curves. Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sorry, did you have a second question?
Yeah.
I can't remember it now that you were asked the first time we come back.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, so can you kind of check these upper bounds empirically? Like, I mean, what, do they look like they're tight? So you've got this third, which you think is the correct answer now.
Yeah. So indeed, we just finished those simulations because it was, there are very many things to consider. So if you do ADA boost, there's some kind of standard default value for the number of iterations and all that things. And if you take those values, you don't see it. But if you do enough iterations as the theory asks for, with a small enough learning rate, then you see it perfectly. It's really incredible. So you see the okay. 1/3 rate, which is in the L2 conversions, and you see the 1/3 rate in the margin. You see it's really perfectly. But of course, at a certain point, you know, the L2 distance between two vectors, which both have norm equal to 1, can never be bigger than 2. So there's some bounding off the curve if at certain points. But I mean, it's really quite seeable. And for the L1 margin, so we know that the upper bound and the lower bound are the same up to constants. And indeed, so you see that in the simulations. It's really very nice. Yeah.
Did your question come back to you, Judith, or you just...
Yes. So it's a bit related to what Robin was asking, and maybe I just didn't understand what you were saying, but so for the ADA boost, or more or less for your last line of your column of your box at the end of your table at the end, you didn't get the result, the rate for the case where you have the sparse and not sparse. So do you think is that it's a technical problem and you don't get the proof yet, but there is a chance that the rate is better, or is it a case where actually you can't do better? What do you imagine?
I don't know, but in the simulations, if there is noise, we see that, this one, we see the 1/3 in the simulation. If there's no noise, we see the 1/2. So probably we missed some point there. Probably, I do think that indeed, if there is no noise, it should be possible. It's just that we cannot exactly bound the L1 norm of the estimator by the L1 norm of the truth, but there's a constant in front, that's all, which is of order 1, but still, that bothers us. Yeah, so it's a very good question, and then we keep on thinking, oh yes, that should be possible, but then so far we didn't succeed. So I gave this talk in Oberwolfach, and then André Montemari was there, Montanari, and he just shook his head. He said, so probably. But that was the 1/4, so I don't know. He shook his head at this.
You think he thought it was a rubbish bound, or you thought it was a hopeless business?
I don't know. I wanted to ask him, but he didn't. I'll keep on working on that one. Because there, I don't know about lower bounds either, so I don't know.
Do you have a question, Patrick?
Yeah, thanks, Rami, and thank you, Sarah. I really enjoyed the talk. So I had a question on the connection with Adabus as well, just because it wasn't clear from the slide what you're really doing with it. So I understood that you look at the limits of it, but at that point you have exactly the max margin solution. So do you do something with early stopping?
We have some kind of theoretical result, which says if you have T like log N and something at least, and the learning rate of this and this order, the number of steps of that and that order, then the margin coming out of this algorithm is that and that much larger or smaller than the margin coming out of the max margin algorithm. So there are asymptotic results, but we sort of refined them so that you can really see the non-asymptotic relation. But I didn't put it on the slide, that's right.
I see. Yeah. And so within this picture, you're able to prove that if you do this type of early stopping, you achieve better bounds as a function of
the theory says you should not do early stopping, you should do enough iterations. So you go on, you do your Adaboost algorithm, then at a certain point you start interpolating, and you continue with your Adaboost algorithm, enough iterations, and then the theory says that you are close to this max margin solution. We say exactly how we can give some bounds on how close you are then. And we see it also in the simulation. So if you do the Adaboost algorithm with small step size, learning rate and enough iterations, you see the curves are you can hardly distinguish the curves. I'm sorry, these simulations are just done, so I didn't put them on the slides. But if it's kind of strange, if you do the Adaboost algorithm with large step size, it is giving much better bounds. So it seems to be, it's even still interpolates, but it gives better classification error, so smaller classification error. This, I don't know why, but this is what the simulations say.
I see. I will. So I'm familiar with the literature on regression.
Yeah,
and there, I believe it was Rascuti and Wainwright. They have some paper connecting early stopping with notion of minimax optimality in that setting.
Yes.
So, I understand now you're focusing on interpolation and you want enough iterations for this phenomenon to kick in.
Yeah. So you're doing the really going way beyond what is allowed for classical statistics. You don't do early stopping, you just go on with your iterations.
And that's presumably with developing, you should be seeing better rates as you do with your benchmark estimator. That would be mine.
Well, there's one thing, the rates can be better because you can do something similar with regularization, but then you can't compute it. That's the point. So theoretically, you can sort of minimize some sine function, but that's a hopeless non-convex problem. So
you're thinking of knowing where to stop.
I don't know. If you know where to stop, then I would say this gives you it's a good question. So if you look at the benchmark, let me just go back. I would say knowing if you do early stopping, that's like a regularization. So just out of some vague idea, I would say it would give you these rates.
Yeah.
Which is then worse than the interpolating rate, which is kind of strange. In a sense.
Anyway,
this is something to look at.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, Sarah. I think we better stop there. So let's all applaud Sarah again for an excellent talk.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.